temple room that we were in one corner, translation corner. Hare Krishna. Anyway, welcome again to Yuvajadam. And I think Judy wanted us to talk about sort of sustainability and how Yuvajadam in Krishna Valley is striving for that. I say striving for it because real sustainability, in the real sense, probably is quite distant from the present day for us. Very often when we talk about sustainable communities, then people relate to, can you feed yourself? And even that's sort of a relative issue. Can we feed ourselves? We're never going to starve to death. But, you know, we're a kitchen religion, and devotees like to have feasts, and we like to eat all kinds of things that don't necessarily grow here, like, for instance, rice. The climate is too cool. And as you can see, we don't have enough water to actually have rice. So what do? Well, we've got fantastic wheat, but if devotees are needy and if they're really dependent on eating rice, then we're not self-sufficient in terms of providing rice or sugar or some certain ingredients. And some of you are from Spain, so Spain is a lot, we've got a lot better climate than we do here. This is a single growing season climate, and to have fresh food in a single growing season is not possible. You have to have at least two seasons for that. So it means that vegetables, fruits, and everything else, you'll probably see our big cold storage, not electrical cold storage, but underground cold storage. So that's where we all during the summer, starting now or pretty soon, we're preserving, we're making preserves. And so we eat from preserves. Now, of course, eating from preserves and eating fresh things is also different. If it's a question of starving to death, then you're happy with anything that you eat. You know, during the war, they would boil shoes, leather shoes, for soup, and that's what people ate. So that even that was good. So in that type of perspective, or in a crisis situation, yes, we certainly feed ourselves. In terms of day-to-day life, not yet, but pretty soon, the general motto of devotees who are, at least here, eating in this tent during the day is, we eat what grows. And which is also quite interesting because, you know, things don't... you don't harvest things in the way that things are available in the grocery store. So you go in a grocery store and here's a cabbage. Of course, cabbage is available all year round, and that's one thing that does grow here. And cabbage has its benefits, although it's not exactly the tastiest thing in the world. But you've got cabbage and carrots and Brussels sprouts and cauliflower and all kinds of vegetables, and they're all there on the shelf. That's not how vegetables grow. Vegetables all come at different times, which means that sometimes you may only have cauliflower, sometimes you may only have karela, sometimes you may only have okra, sometimes you may only have this. So at different times, and that also you can't say, oh, I want this. You can't want anything, you can only eat what grows. And it grows at different times. And of the things that really you can keep throughout the season, the main things are potatoes, squash, pumpkins. Those last through the year. So that's another aspect of sustainability. Sustainability is, as was mentioning earlier, having to be actually just satisfied with what we have. And that means you have to actually readjust your diet to being able to eat what comes off the earth. Now, this isn't rocket science. This is the way everybody lived in the world up until, I don't know, 100 years ago or even less. And now we've got all kinds of goods being flown in from different parts of the world, and they pick food, fruit, vegetables that's not ripe, and with the help of certain chemicals and other type of things, they're preserved, and then you buy things from everywhere, from so many places. Real sustainability, you have to make that adjustment that sustainability is not that, yes, I'm able to eat whatever I want to eat at any time of the day, at any time of the year, but sustainability is that I'm eating what's available. And that's eating. And eating is just one part of life, because right now you're not eating, but you're all sitting here. Unfortunately, we're sitting on something that's plastic and rubber, which is not really ideal. What should we be sitting on? We should be sitting on woven mats, straw mats, and that's another part of sustainability. That is that all of the, and this is plastic also, and all of these things are destroying our ability to be sustainable. Depending on these type of artificial things is no good. So if you look around and you see how much plastic there is here, that's how unsustainable we are. But, for instance, in order to have a chair or in order to have mats, there has to be enough devotees here that it's going to be a livelihood for someone to actually make chairs. You have to have a lot of rear ends in order for someone to, in order to make enough chairs for a person to make a living, for that it's sustainable for him. Because you can make, you know, these wicker basket chairs, these woven chairs, they're very nice, they're very comfortable, and of course you can put cushions in them, different types of cushions, and same thing with the mats. But if there's someone here who's going to be making chairs and mats and baskets and other type of things, there has to be enough consumption. Unless there's enough devotees living here, and right now we have, say, 35, 40 families, 150 devotees here, there's another 150 devotees in the village. Unless you have enough devotees, it's not enough to sustain somebody that is going to learn the art of doing all of these things, and there's a lot of things that can be made just by wicker, and that wicker comes from this weeping willow over here. You see all its tendrils, its branches. When those things dry, then you weave that in to all kinds of things. You get baskets, you get mats, you get chairs, you get beds, you get tables. But it has to be enough that someone can maintain himself and maintain his family. And that possibly that then becomes a future for the children. So sustainability isn't just food. Sustainability is something that has to translate to everything. And all of you are wearing clothes, and that's a good thing. But the clothes that we're wearing, some of it may be silk. That's highly improbable that in this climate we're going to actually manufacture silk. You'd have to have a greenhouse and be able to heat it all year round. It's a very, very expensive proposition. Jut can that is len. What's that in English? Jut and these are the different things. We just need to see what it is in English. Cotton is also no chance. You really need a lot of hemp. So there's hemp and gummy. These are the two things that the people would traditionally make cloth from. Also, nothing extraordinary because that's what everyone had before. They didn't wear imported clothes from India and so on, but they made all these things themselves. And then wool. Wool is also available. You didn't need to keep sheep. But again, it has to be worthwhile. It has to be worthwhile for someone who's actually going to, or even if the farm is growing everything, then it has to be worthwhile for someone. Once it's collected, say all the hemp is collected, that then it's brushed out and processed and made into yarn, and then you have you have a machine that you make cloth with, and there's going to be enough consumers, and the consumers are of two kinds. One is that there's a enough number of people to make saris, dhotis, kurtas, cholis, and other type of things to wear. And the same type of consumer, but you need the devotees are willing to do that. Are you actually, because if we have a community here, devotees have to be willing to give up wearing silk to wear hemp. And hemp is much coarser. It's not as comfortable. Still, getting silk means that we're maintaining some business somewhere in India, people who don't even know and who are simply doing it as an enterprise. It has nothing to do with any type of social cohesion. But here, one of the aspects of living here in New Brajadan is that everyone here agrees to actually consume the products that are manufactured here, because that's the only way that it's going to be sustainable. If someone is willing to make, just like in the very beginning, we had a devotee who was making pots, clay pots, because we don't need to eat paper plates, and certainly not plastic, and you know, the clay pots are the best thing, but the clay pots cost, again, maintenance of the person. Are we willing to pay the price of consuming enough clay pots that it's a livelihood for somebody? So if you let your imagination go, that everything that you use, sustainability means everything that you use is made here. Like shoes, you all left your shoes over there. So forget Nike and forget all these other running shoes and everything else. You have to be, for instance, like the wooden shoes that they wear in Holland, or some other type of shoes. You can make shoes out of leather. Prabhupada said that we can make shoes out of leather if we're going to wait until our animals pass away, and then if someone wants to actually do that, to skin them. We don't do that, and we don't allow it to do that. Right now, when our cows and bulls pass away, then we just bury them, and we sort of respect them or revere them like we would others, like humans. And we have a cemetery, actually, quite a distance away, but we have a cemetery for the animals as well. But you can make shoes out of corn stalk, and it wears very, very well. It almost wears as good as leather. So the ear of the corn, when you take that off, when you take the pliable part off, that can be woven and made into very good shoes. They're not running shoes. I'm willing to exchange running shoes for some clogs, wooden clogs or something else that someone is going to make for the purpose of actually maintaining them. So sustainability has these two aspects. One is, can you actually manufacture or provide these things? And the other one, which in my experience here in 25 years is the more difficult one, is getting devotees to be willing to actually give up all of those things. If you want gold, golden ornaments, then there has to be a goldsmith here. If you want jewelry, then there has to be a jeweler who makes it here. If you need socks, and of course you need socks, then someone also makes that here. So if you just think about all the things that you use, and of course there are not going to be any computer manufacturers over here, that's something that we're going to buy, but things that are necessary for life, then just like here, ultimately, of course, it wouldn't be practical for us to have someone who makes canvas. We wouldn't consume enough canvas. We only need a few tents, and then after that, it's finished. So that's something that we would have to depend on the outside world on. Although it would be possible if there was a really, really big community. And then just let me talk about what that requires. I really don't know the exact size of what a sustainable community is. This community is not big enough to be fully sustainable. It can feed itself in a very austere way, with absolute necessity. But if we really wanted to eat like devotees eat, you would have to do a lot of things. We can grow rice, but you'd have to grow rice that doesn't grow in water, but rice that grows out, actually there's a type of rice that will just grow here. But you really have to do a lot of weeding. It means practically a full-time job for doing that, which makes, if you engage many people in weeding, it makes the rice very expensive. Not necessarily expensive in terms of money, but in terms of labor, in terms of manpower, in terms of maintaining those people, and how do you maintain those people. However you maintain them, they end up being an expense. So how big a community would you need? My general calculation of a community was usually based on what it actually takes to maintain the deities. And to maintain Radha Shyam, it takes about 25 full-time pujaris. And if I figure that every one of those pujaris are brahmanas, I mean Brahmins by qualification, they're not now. I don't know if there's maybe one or two Brahmins in the entire pujari department. Now I'm talking Varnashram, not people who are second initiated. Because someone may be second initiated, that's their Brahminical qualification as a Vaishnava, but someone who by nature is really a Brahmin, then I would, to have 25 full-time Brahmins, I would mean that there has to be about 2,500 adults here in Krishna Valley. 2,500 adults, and say there's two children, two family, but even that's not really enough. That's another aspect of sustainability. You really need three children in a family so that the children actually maintain the successive generations as well, their parents and their grandparents. One child can't do that. One child can't maintain three generations behind him or behind her. What to speak of, it's not just three generations, but you've got two sets of families. You've got one boy, one girl, they marry. If they're single child family, then they have to maintain their parents. And considering our lifestyle is very innocent lifestyle, and that means the devotees are going to live a long life, that means they're going to have to actually maintain their grandparents, and maybe even great-grandparents, that's a lot of people for two people to maintain. And if the lady is mostly the housewife, that means all these people are dependent on one person. That's a lot. So that's also a certain aspect of sustainability. But if you have three children, and one 2,500 couples, that makes 10,000 people. 10,000 people means what you see here now, it's almost 100 times the size of Krishna Valley now, in terms of number of houses, number of devotees. And then you would be talking about a village, because 10,000 people is more than a village, actually. Now it's a town. In Hungary, they don't have a word for town. They only have villages and cities. So they don't have two words. So it's a town, and historically speaking, that was actually the size of cities in Europe. Usually, although there were a few larger cities in medieval Europe, such as Paris and London, but traditionally cities stayed at the 10,000 mark. Because 10,000, both self-sufficient, and at the same time, and it's not too big that people no longer know who their neighbors are, and no longer know who everybody else is.